This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on all of the platforms, most likely the one that you are listening to this show on. So if you're a football fan, go check that out. But we're here to talk about the SmackDown that aired on October is my favorite month of the entire year, so definitely need to give myself a nice little smack in the mouth for messing that one up. But October 7th, 2021, the season premiere of SmackDown, and it definitely felt like a season premiere. I will say, I noticed just initially the graphics. Like, if you pay close attention to SmackDown as they kind of flow throughout the show, the graphics and the font were a lot different than what we've seen in the past. Normally, like, the font and, like, the lettering, whenever they have the wrestlers' names pop up as they're coming out to the ring, that font matched the same font that SmackDown said or in the SmackDown logo. So just something little there, and if you pay attention, you might notice some more little things there. I also noticed the white ropes. They're still there. I'm going to continue to talk about this until they bring the blue ones back. Hopefully this happens on October 22nd, whenever they officially let the brand split go into effect. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to there. But other than that, I mean, the show kind of just begins pretty quickly, and a pretty good episode of SmackDown. I mean, I will say that there wasn't many low points in this show. There's 1, 2, 3 matches, but one of them lasts 18 minutes, so a solid match, and it's the Finn Balor versus Cesaro one, as you can expect. So we got a big chunk of the show taken up there. Some of them were King of the Ring and Queen's Crown qualifying matches. I think all of them were, actually. So, and then we get a nice promo from Paul Heyman, Happy Talk, a segment there. And then we get some interesting stuff with Naomi, so definitely an episode that I was pleased to watch. And if it wasn't for scheduling issues, I would have been able to record this episode immediately after SmackDown went off the air. So hopefully we can get back on that train. But anyways, let's continue on here with the show, and let's go ahead and start it off with what the show started with, and that is the contract signing for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Obviously, you know it's going to be a triple threat match at Crown Jewel. Doesn't really make sense, though, when you look at who's in this match. Is it going to be really for the SmackDown Women's Championship, given that Becky Lynch is probably going to end up becoming the Raw Women's Championship or the Raw Women's Champion at some point in the near future? You just expect her and Charlotte to do that switch and then be the rightful champion on their respective brand. So it's kind of weird. This is confusing. It's really sloppy. Not a fan of it. That's why I think that you should get all this stuff out of the way before you do a draft. But, you know, it is what it is. They're not necessarily known for thinking things out logically and, you know, doing the best thing you possibly can do. So, I mean, I guess we shouldn't expect them to always make the right decision. But, hey, you know, it is what it is. We're going to get this match. Becky Lynch is probably going to win. You're not going to take the championship off of her. I know we're not doing any predictions here, but, I mean, I think that's pretty obvious, especially at a crown or a pay-per-view like Crown Jewel. You're not going to take the championship off of Becky Lynch. And, I mean, I'm actually interested in seeing what they're wearing for that match. All three women. It's going to be a triple threat. They'll probably have that tagline going throughout the show. This is the first ever triple threat women's match. Last time we were here, we had the first ever women's singles match. Now we're going to have the first ever women's triple threat match. And it's going to be for a championship, so an actual match with some stakes in it. So I guess that's what you could expect going forward, and that's what this contract signing was for before I got a little bit off topic or a little down a wormhole. But the contract doesn't really get signed in this segment. Bianca signs it because she's ready. She's standing in the ring. But Sasha Banks is kind of over there standing on commentary. And Becky Lynch has a table set up in the ramp, kind of just walking out to the ring. She just stops like right there. And that's where she does this. They're kind of going back and forth. They're trading verbal blows. I do think Bianca got the better of them. She said, "You guys have both been attacking me from behind. I'm standing right here in the ring now. And of course, you guys aren't. So why don't you come in here and do what you've done in the past. Or at the very least, sign this contract to make our match official for Crown Jewel." So the contract ends up not being signed just yet, but there are some physical encounters that happen here. Bianca actually tries to do the KOD to both of them. She puts both women on her shoulders, kind of stacks them up, looks very dangerous. Luckily, they get down, but they both end up going through the table, and she stands tall, which makes sense because I wanted to talk about how Bianca is just excelling right now on the mic. She's going over to Raw, so I won't get this in-depth, you know, opportunity to cover her in-depth, I guess I should say. So I won't be watching her quite as closely over this next year, but it's still impressive to see. She's definitely, I mean, Matt has said it, and it was actually a very good point, and I didn't even think about that, but she most definitely is the best NXT call-up of all time, just whenever you talk about getting the most bang for your buck. Like, her year has been dominant. She didn't just get put over immediately. It was a nice, slow build where she won the Royal Rumble, had her moment at the top of the mountain, and she's still relevant right now. She's still in the title picture, moving over to a new brand. So there's good things with Bianca Belair. There's good things that you can build on. And I think he's exactly right. She's definitely the best NXT call-up of all time. And I think this segment on this episode of SmackDown was another step in the right direction for her. She's continuing to get better. She's continuing to grow. I mean, her promos feel like they're not written, if I could spit it out. They feel like they're literally from her heart and that she's actually meaning what she says. And most of the time, like, it's valid. You know, she's not just out there spitting BS. She's actually talking about things that are accurate. So I can appreciate that about Bianca Belair. But the contract does get signed a little bit later in the night backstage. Becky Lynch signs her side of it. I'm not really sure if Sasha signed hers. If she did, I must have missed that. But I know Becky eventually signed hers backstage with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville. So that's that segment. Continuing on here with another one that happened. Let's see what happened next right after the opening part of the show. And it was Rey Mysterio versus Sami Zayn. This was the opening match for the King of the Ring tournament, it's literally one of the tournament matches. So if you're in this tournament, you're already qualified. So Rey Mysterio versus Sami Zayn, and Dominic chooses to stay backstage, and for whatever reason, Sami Zayn kind of comes up and he's doing that thing that he was doing a couple weeks ago where he's trying to get in Dominic's head and maybe tell him that he's a little bit better than what he really is, just so he can kind of try to instigate and further the gap that's obviously there between Rey and Dominic, because Rey kind of was a little bit confused as to why Dominic didn't want to accompany him to the ring. He kept looking back as he was walking down to the ring. So they were trying to let you know that Rey, it really wasn't sitting well with Rey that Dominic wasn't following out there. But Dominic does end up coming out to the match, and he actually costs Rey Mysterio the loss because he kind of jumps up to the apron. He's trying to fix the top turnbuckle because Sami was trying to take it off and cheat, obviously. But he's trying to fix it for his dad so his dad doesn't get hurt. Rey's like, hey, what are you doing? Get off the apron. Come on, like, get down. And as he's doing that, Sami Zayn comes up from behind, pushes Rey Mysterio into Dominic. So Rey knocks over Dominic off the apron. And that's actually the first time I think that it's actually had to get physical between those two. We've seen them argue. And I know this wasn't like an intentional push that Rey did, but still, it was the first time that it's like accidental. Rey knocked Dominic on his ass. I mean, it is what it is. I feel like I noticed that, and I would have noticed in the past if things had gotten physical between those two. So definitely something to keep an eye on. I mean, I know they both, if I'm not mistaken, got drafted over to Monday Night Raw. So good luck over there. I hope that everything goes smooth from the Mysterios there. But Rey does pay a tribute to Eddie Guerrero. And he's the one person who, whenever he pays a tribute to Eddie Guerrero, I enjoy it every single time, because you know their friendship that they used to have and how their careers were really almost lockstep. Not you know, exactly the same, but I mean, they were both in WCW. They both came to WWE around the same time. I know that Eddie probably had a little bit of a head start on Rey in the WWE, but either way, if you're a wrestling fan, you know the connection between these two. So anytime he does a tribute to Eddie Guerrero, it does mean a little bit more. And obviously, it being Eddie Guerrero's birthday, you know, it's just a little bit of a birthday shout out there. But Sami Zayn gets the win, and he advances. After he wins this match, he kind of walks up to the stage, and they have a little bit of a visual there, I guess. I don't really know. It's like the thrones and the crowns for each respective tournament, and Sami kind of goes over there and puts on the crown for the King of the Ring tournament, pretty much is what he's doing. It's weird. He also puts on another thing. I was trying to think what it was called, but I have no idea. It goes like on his head underneath the crown. I'm not really familiar with that type of stuff, so definitely that's on me. But we get another match here, and this one's actually for the Queen's Crown tournament, and it's Zelina Vega versus Toni Storm. Not really a long match at all. Zelina Vega does get the clean win here. Hopefully we see both of these women more often going forward. I really think that they're crucial parts of the SmackDown women's division. I know Zelina actually might be on Raw now that I think about it, but Toni Storm's on SmackDown. That's a big get for SmackDown, and I'm not really too Since I brought it up, and quickly, I already said Zelina Vega won that match, and there really wasn't much to it, so there's not much more to talk about other than it's nice that she finally has a win here under her belt. But as far as the draft goes, and the women and the men that are on the roster, and they're not. See, I almost called into the mailbag this week because I really, if you just look at the rosters as a whole, like if you just look at them in of itself, like you didn't pay attention to the draft, you didn't watch it, you just see what the rosters are. Then you look at it, I mean, hey, it's not that bad of a roster. I mean, they have some no-brainer picks, clearly. Roman Reigns, Charlotte, Drew McIntyre, Sasha Banks. Like, there's some big-name people on SmackDown. So it's not like I'm complaining that we got the bottom of the barrel. It's just the way that they happened. Like, Finn Balor, in what world do the Viking Raiders get drafted before Finn Balor? Like, honestly, in what world is that a good pick? So right there, I'm not really a big fan of it. Even some of the NXT picks they made, like, number one, the group, whatever, what is their name? Hit Row. Okay, look. In particular, I said that I'm not extremely familiar with them, and that's true. So I'm not going to just sit here and act like I am. But what I have seen from them is, I guess the big guy in the group, I think his name's Top Dollar. He was on that, like, wrestling Lost Treasure show that's on A&E. I don't remember what channel it was on, but it was on TV. And it's kind of just like a little bit of like breaking kayfabe, like, cause you kind of see the actual guy there trying to like make offers to retired wrestlers for memorabilia that's actually worth a lot of money. So, I mean, that right there kind of took me out of it. Cause I mean, even then they had underneath his name on the show, like he's a wrestler in training pretty much. Like he's an NXT superstar who's training. So I knew, wait, so this guy's a wrestler. I've never seen him before. And then I started seeing him gradually on NXT. And then I was like, okay, I mean, he's completely different than what he really is, but it's still hard not to forget that that first initial, like, first impression where I first ever saw that guy. So that's one downside to, like, social media and how much behind the curtain you actually get to see these days, because now they're literally affecting your first impression. Like, I had no idea who this guy was until I saw him on that TV show, and then I connected the dots. Ooh, that's that same guy when I see him on NXT, and now he gets called up to the main roster. Not really extremely high on this group. I don't have high expectations at the gate. They could prove me wrong, and that'd be pretty cool if they did that. I definitely would be on board with this group becoming a hit here on SmackDown, but, I mean, don't really have high expectations. Zia Lee, I believe, is another one. Zia Lee, maybe I'm pronouncing her name wrong. I've seen her wrestle before. I know she had that grudge-type gimmick. Not her, but someone she was with, I guess. I'm not really exactly sure what the setup was there, but they had another guy there, like a male wrestler who was there with them. So, I mean, NXT people are probably telling me, dude, it's this and that. You're actually sounding like a complete stooge right now. So I agree. Not really too familiar with NXT, but I do know who this woman is. And I'm not saying it was a bad pick in terms of, like, getting her on the roster, but where she was picked and wrestlers that were still on the board. Like, legitimately, and I know this might be a little graphic for some people, but there were certain points in the show, like maybe with the Viking Raiders in particular, I felt like SmackDown would have been better just literally getting one of those draft cards, like taking one of their draft picks, wadding it up, and wiping their you-know-what with it. Like, I literally feel like you would have just been better off doing that. And then don't even get me started about the Liv Morgan stuff. You guys know how I feel about her. I wish her the best on Monday Night Raw, but there were opportunities to get her on SmackDown. So that kind of, I mean, I know she's going to do well on Raw. I mean, maybe. She just lost her match, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit, but I guess all in all, I'm happy with the SmackDown roster, but I feel like they definitely got the shaft a little bit in terms of logical picks. Like, night one, everything really made sense in terms of who was drafted where and when. The second night's where you kind of lost me there, but moving on here in SmackDown, let's talk about something else that happened. Okay, so we talked about Zelina Vega. Now we can get to something that I honestly feel like might have been one of the very best parts in the entire show. And it's the Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, Jey Uso, the Bloodline. They come out to the ring and they get a little bit of mic time. And it starts how most of Roman Reigns' promos and segments starts, by him addressing which city they're in and telling that specific crowd, this week it was San Jose, California, telling them to acknowledge him. And this week, he actually, after he tells them to acknowledge him, he tells them to acknowledge Paul Heyman for accomplishing his mission, which was successfully getting the Usos drafted to SmackDown, and they were SmackDown's first pick of the entire night, which that pick in and of itself is a little bit debatable. I mean, I honestly would take Finn Balor before the Usos. I don't think that Raw was, you know, chomping at the bit to make the Usos one of their tag teams over there, but who knows? I guess, you know, it plays in that he was able to make the Usos SmackDown's first pick. It plays into that storyline a little bit better, like Paul Heyman did an even better job to convince the executives or people at Fox and USA, whoever it was, to make that pick. So He tells the crowd to acknowledge Paul Heyman for being a wise man, but the crowd quickly starts to chant Suplex City, and Roman kind of stops him a little bit there and says, guys, Suplex City doesn't exist, and it's actually the island of relevancy. And then he turns his attention to Paul Heyman and tells him to admit that he's responsible for Brock Lesnar's free agency. And for a second here, I actually thought Paul Heyman was about to come clean and say, yes, I am involved, just because of how, like, nervous he looked at that question. He wasn't looking at Roman Reigns even whenever he started talking. Roman had to physically grab the bottom of his chin and lift it up and make him look him in the eyes. But once he did that, it seems like it might have just like flipped a switch inside of Paul Heyman, because Paul Heyman responds and he starts to actually, he tells Roman Reigns that, look, I am not responsible for Brock Lesnar's free agency. Obviously, I have nothing to do with the whole SummerSlam thing. And then he starts to explain why. He kind of says, look, it would be absolutely stupid if I did have some master plan like this to tell you before the fact. Why would I be laying Easter eggs and basically blowing my own cover this long before Crown Jewel? Like, wouldn't I wait till Crown Jewel and then have Brock Lesnar be like, he literally played it out how he could have a plan to do this, but he doesn't. He was literally telling Roman Reigns, look, if I was going to do this, it would be like this and this and this. And he was like very specific, almost as if he did think it out beforehand, because his response was really well thought out, really calculated. So it definitely makes sense to believe that he's innocent. I do. I really think that Paul Heyman, unless he is an absolute, you know, godlike actor and he's really convincing, then maybe he could be having something up his sleeve. But I believe him, because Roman Reigns then tells him, well, don't tell me. Look at the camera and tell Brock Lesnar. And Paul does just that. He has about a 4-minute, almost 5-minute, I don't know, it could be a little bit shorter than that. It seemed like it was a very long little promo here directed at Brock Lesnar, where he said, just like I told you years ago that The Undertaker met his match at WrestleMania 30 whenever you broke the streak, I'm telling you right now, Brock Lesnar, that you have met your match. And his name is Roman Reigns. And just quickly, I'll say, and this is something that I told my roommate last night while we were watching the show, is that, man, after it was over, Paul Heyman, he will never get the respect he deserves. And that's just because he deserves so much of it. Even if you show Paul Heyman respect, he still deserves more because of how good he is on the mic. He just went probably like 3 to 4 minutes with a very passionate, logical promo that he was actually spitting straight up fire. If I'll take a little bit of Becky Lynch's saying back in the day, but he was just really, he wasn't missing. He wasn't stumbling over any words. He didn't break eye contact at all. He was locked in. And there aren't many people in this world that can do what Paul Heyman does. So it was just something that I appreciated there. And if I would have been in person, I probably would have given him a little bit of a round of applause there. But for now, at least, Roman Reigns seems to trust Paul Heyman, and Paul Heyman seems to be back in the good graces of the bloodline. And at least for now, I mean, because he mic drops after that. He literally drops the mic and he leaves, because he knows. But I feel like Paul Heyman knows whenever he absolutely kills it on the mic. So he just drops it and walks out. He earned his check for the week just by killing it like that. So definitely shout out to Paul Heyman. But I think that does just about do it for all Roman Reigns stuff this show. I don't think he makes another appearance, and I don't think we hear anything else from Paul Heyman or anything like that. So maybe next week we'll hear a little bit more. I do believe Brock Lesnar might be in attendance next week at the Supersized SmackDown. Yeah, Supersized SmackDown on FS1. And guys, I'll tell you why they're doing this. There's going to be MLB playoffs on next Friday on Fox. So they're trying to make it seem like SmackDown isn't, you know, just getting absolutely, you know, brushed to the side for some, you know, playoff baseball. They're trying to make it seem like, no, this is a super-sized SmackDown. We're moving it over to FS1. Don't think about the fact that baseball playoff games are more important to Fox, so they're just going to completely move a show that's booked there weekly. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. It just shows you where SmackDown is on the totem pole to playoff baseball, and I mean, I guess I'd agree with them. You're not really missing anything in terms of, like, this isn't WrestleMania season or anything like that, you know, and this is the playoff baseball, so it's a more important time in that sport. Makes sense. I'm not saying that it's the wrong thing. I think it's funny that they're trying to make it seem like it's just going to be some big SmackDown. I believe someone on Twitter said that it might be like a 30-minute extra show. I don't really know. I mean, it has to be something. You can't just call it Supersized SmackDown and do absolutely nothing. So I don't really know. Ashley Mann actually said it was funny. I saw her tweet. So does that mean a regular SmackDown episode is just a medium or large fry or whatever, or medium or large episode? It was actually funny to see. But yeah, because I kind of thought the same thing. Like, what? Like, are you trying to tease that you have some promotion or some partnership with McDonald's going forward. Like, I really don't know, because now that I think about it, supersize, that hasn't been like an actual term in forever when it comes to fast food. Like McDonald's, they don't say supersized anymore. It's large, small, medium, or large. That's what you get. So I don't know. I just thought that was weird. You know, they always have to do something special. You know, they have to try to add a little bit of flavor to their show if they think it's not quite what they want it to be. And I guess they just, they can't bear the fact that that they're going to get moved off their show on their weekly slot for a playoff baseball game. But I don't really know there. I just do think that's funny. But yeah, we don't see anything else from Roman Reigns. So next week on Supersize SmackDown, we will likely see a little bit more of Paul Heyman, Roman, the entire bloodline. And Brock Lesnar will likely be there. So I love what we are likely going to get here pretty soon. Let's see another match here for the Queen's Crown. And this is Liv Morgan versus Carmella. Both women were drafted over to Monday Night Raw. So likely could be their last match on SmackDown for a very long time. And if so, I mean, you guys already know how I feel about Liv. Definitely going to miss her over here. But her alone is a reason for me to kind of tune into SmackDown or to tune into Monday Night Raw. So I guess it might have been a smart move from WWE if they want to get another fan watching Raw consistently. But Carmella puts on her mask again. She gets a clean win over Liv Morgan with a super kick. So, I mean, how much worse can things get for Liv losing clean to Carmella? I don't really know, especially what could be your last match on SmackDown in a Queen's Crown match. So, like, she's eliminated now. And I feel like she had a chance to be one of the favorites to win. I definitely didn't expect her to lose in the first round, 100%. I thought at the very least she's going to win a couple matches in this tournament and kind of have a little bit of a run, but I don't know. It is very frustrating to see them continue to misuse Liv Morgan. I mean, I don't really know what else you need to see. Is because she's a little bit smaller. We'll put her next to Trish Stratus, for Christ's sake. Trish Stratus wasn't the hugest woman of all time either, but look at her career. Look at Alexa Bliss. If you book her correctly and you make us believe that she can go and that she's an actual threat, then we'll believe it. Stop letting her lose matches to Carmella when these matches have stake, when they actually have, you know, things up for grabs, like winning this inaugural Queen's Crown tournament, whatever you want to call it. It meant a lot to her, I bet. And Carmella, she's not going to win this thing. If she would have lost to like Shayna Baszler or somebody who actually has a chance to go on and win, then yeah, I'd be like, okay, cool. You know, it makes sense. Liv wasn't going to beat her, but she lost to Carmella. She's beaten Carmella like, what, 3 times over the past couple of months? I don't know. This one right here just didn't really make sense, and it was probably the only complaint that I have on this episode of SmackDown that I really feel like was a little bit of a questionable call. But moving on here, we get a backstage promo from Mace. I believe his name is still going to be Mace. They're probably not going to go back to Dio Madden, I believe was his name, when he was a very short member. Not, you know, literally short. He's tall as hell, but he had a short run on the commentary team over on Monday Night Raw. He had that face-off with Brock Lesnar, ended up going through a table. So he had a little bit of a run there as Dio Madden. Now we know him as Mace. And the only thing I wrote down here about this promo is he said he is not here to compete, because that's basically what the interviewer said, Kayla Braxton. She said, are you excited to come here and compete on SmackDown? And he said, well, I'm not here to compete. I'm here to annihilate. If I were here to compete, it would imply that there's competition. Which kind of, I mean, it was a clever line. It was. I mean, it was a good promo, but coming from Mace, it was like, I don't really know. I mean, I've seen you lose a lot over the better part of a year, maybe even more. It's been a while since Mace has been able to be taken seriously at all. So we'll see if he has any, if there's anything to back up that statement, if he actually does have a little bit of a run here. I'm not going to expect that. And I think that he's going to continue to be the lower mid card and likely be taking losses on a consistent basis. But we'll see. I could be wrong there. Up next, we get the Happy Talk segment with Baron Corbin, or Happy Corbin, whichever one you want to call. Take your pick. His name's probably going to change here in a couple months, so just pick whatever you want. This time, or in this particular night, I'll call him Happy Corbin because it's the whole Happy Talk thing. So he's joined by his partner in crime, Madcap Moss, one of the new guys, one of the newer members of SmackDown. And it was supposed to be Kevin Owens as his, I don't even know if Kevin Owens was supposed to be his guest, honestly. They didn't really advertise it. So it might have been only Madcap Moss, but Kevin Owens decides to crash this party. He shows up and he attempts to like go in the ring. He meets Madcap Moss on the way to the ring, on the ramp, kind of beats the hell out of him for a little bit, gets in the ring and he goes at Corbin, but the numbers eventually get the better of him and he gets left on his back. And Corbin and Madcap Moss are actually getting the better of Kevin Owens in this storyline. Kevin did get drafted over to Raw, so that's another pretty tough blow for me. I wanted to see him stay on SmackDown, but I don't know. This could mean that he is getting buried because there's more time on Raw. There's more time for them to give him some type of, like, terrible, you know, situation or terrible program to be in. When you look over on SmackDown, it's only a two-hour show, so there's not a whole lot of time for you to just throw in, you know, unless you're just going to have him lose every week. You know, then it's not hard to just book him in a match and have him lose, and just have him lose, like, be on a 17-week losing streak or whatever like that before he leaves the company. But with him going over to Raw, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Kevin Owens doing something with the 24/7 title here in a couple months. And that's not something that I want to see, but would you put it past Monday Night Raw to do something like that? I wouldn't. I mean, we've seen Jeff Hardy chasing that 24/7 championship. Kevin Owens is going over there with really nothing, like no programs that he can kind of, you know, just fall back on where there's a little bit of, like, recent history there. Like, Corbin and Madcap Moss are on SmackDown. Kevin Owens is going to Raw. That's who he's feuding with right now. Like, do you see how it doesn't really make sense? But it could just all be continued signs that Kevin Owens' time here in the WWE is very much numbered. And I hope not. I really do. I hope that he's a guy who stays on WWE. Yeah, AEW's cool. I have no problem with AEW. But, I mean, it's not like I'm just like, hey, let's just go ahead and sacrifice one of our, you know, the crowd's favorite wrestlers. But it's not our choice. Kevin Owens could definitely say, you know what, I'm tired of this BS. They're not going to book me, right? I haven't been booked properly really since I got called up to the main roster. I've had a couple runs here or there with some good programs where I have a good guy to work with. Obviously, I'm a professional, one of the best in the world. I'm going to do a damn good job. That's personally how I feel Kevin Owens, you know, probably thinks about it. He's like, you know, I want to go over there with some of the guys that I'm familiar with, the Young Bucks, go back with Adam Cole over there, you know, join Daniel Bryan, some of the other guys that have made their way. Kevin Owens would fit like a glove over there, but man, I just selfishly do not want to see it. I want to see him over here on SmackDown, and obviously he's on Raw now, so I'm not going to see him on SmackDown for a while, but I want to see him in WWE at the very least. But as far as Madcap Moss and Corbin go, I mean, I don't even know what the hell you could expect from those two guys. They're probably going to come out and be the new version of Miz and Morrison, where they're just cracking jokes and not taking anything serious. They're just out there basically just like a different version of them, a more classy, I guess, version of Miz and Morrison. So I guess just stay tuned. Maybe we'll see a little bit of better stuff from them. I doubt it, but who knows. This is another one of my favorite parts, though, that I'm about to talk about next. This is when Naomi, she walks up to Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, and she asks her straight up, why was I not selected to compete in the Queen's Crown Tournament? Like, why? I'm so, like, decorated. I mean, she basically started to name off her accomplishments, in which case Sonya Deville replies, we know, trust me, we know. You've said it like 100 times, but that's just more reason why she should be in the tournament, in my opinion. If you're well aware with what she brings to the table and the type of competitor she is, why wouldn't you put her in there? But, I mean, there's only 8 slots, so that's one thing that they could have said in their defense, and she hadn't been around in a while. But she just flat out asked. She says, why didn't you put me in this tournament? And Sonya just flat out tells her, look, I don't think you are worthy. I don't think you're good enough, and I don't think you're worthy of being a queen, which is a shot. I mean, I don't know how you could hear someone say that to you and not just think, wow, this person can absolutely go bleep themselves, you know? But anyways, Naomi just says, right then, all right, look, you obviously have a problem with me. Adam Pearce, will you please just trade me back to Raw so I can get a fair shake here? Like, well, what do I got to do? And Sonya Deville replies by saying, look, you're not getting traded to Monday Night Raw because I'm not done with you yet. Next week, you have a match. And then Naomi says, with who? And then Sonya says, with me. Which I popped. I did. I was extremely excited. We're finally going to get to see Sonya Deville out of this corporate WWE official role. I think this is going to be the start of a full-time transition back to being an in-ring competitor. And we're going to get a blow-off here. Like, this was booked perfect, I feel like. There's a little bit of animosity between them for weeks and weeks. And it's like, dude, what the hell is her problem? And now we're getting a little bit of a payoff in this match. And it could lead to something bigger. I hope it does. But just from, you know, at first glance, you look at it and you think, this is a good job by SmackDown for booking it like this and having a little bit of long-term storytelling. Because, I mean, it's not crazy long, but it's several weeks and we finally get a payoff. So I will sit here and I will critique them whenever they don't do a good job. And when they do, I'll give them the credit. So I'm giving them credit here. Like, dude, this was a damn good job and I'm impressed. And I was into it. This entire program with these two, week after week, every little wrinkle, every step forward, I was lockstep along the way. So I'm here for this match and I'm excited. And I hope that Naomi does a little bit of a, puts a little bit of a beat down, I guess to say the least, on Sonya Deville, who's probably going to have a little bit of a rude awakening running those ropes and getting slammed, taking bumps. I'm sure she's been working out, you know, doing all the training and stuff, but still going to be a tall task to get the win next week. But let's see. I mean, all we really have left here is the main event. It was a King of the Ring tournament match between Finn Balor and Cesaro. Finn Balor got the win by hitting the coup de grace. And this match, like I said, lasted 18 minutes. The Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns part of the show was definitely my favorite, only because of like how emotional it was, how much it felt like an old school episode of wrestling when you were watching that. It didn't feel like you're watching just a PG show and just today's WWE, pretty much like what we're accustomed to seeing more often than not. Every now and then you'll get a nice little random segment where it really makes you feel like how you used to feel when you watch wrestling. And that's pretty much what I watch for, is those moments. And I feel like we got one there. Here to close the show, we got a damn good match, though. A nice main event between two more than capable competitors of putting on a five-star match. And they're not like the flippy-floppy type of guys. They just can go, you know, corner to post. These guys know what they're doing in that ring, and I love to see it. No surprise that Finn Balor got the win. Sorry, I was about to say ring, because I could definitely expect him being the person who wins this King of the Ring tournament. Now, I will say, Xavier Woods is somebody who the fans are going to get behind, and he does deserve it. He's in the same side of the bracket as Kofi Kingston, so keep an eye on that. It could end up being Kofi and Xavier kind of colliding on the way there and having a babyface versus babyface match. That would be awesome to see. We don't have to turn them just yet, but this could be the first match where there's actually something up for grabs and they have to compete against each other. But I do think Xavier deserves to win this. I mean, he's been the one. He was the first person to mention it on air. He was the first one to say, "I got the King of the Ring tournament to get warmed up for." I didn't forget that. He said that on Monday Night Raw during a promo with MVP, I think it was. So I think that Xavier Woods is kind of a dark horse there. If not him, though, Finn Balor. Those are my two guys who I think are definitely going to, either one of the two are going to come out on top here. Maybe Zelina Vega in the Queen's Crown tournament. She had a hot start. I would love to see her win that. It would definitely be something that could give her a little bit of a kickstart, maybe springboard her on to have a hell of a year here on Monday Night Raw. I was about to say SmackDown, but she's not on SmackDown. So definitely hope that we can get a little bit more wins and more matches that go to the win column for Zelina Vega, because she's a hell of a wrestler, and I want to see her take some more consistent steps in this category, because she's always been good on the mic. Her size kind of, in terms of being like a women's champion, I'm not really on board with it, but if she can show me, like, win matches against people who you're not supposed to beat. I didn't expect her to beat Toni Storm. Toni Storm's a new call-up. I definitely thought she was going to get the win, but she doesn't, so shout-out to Zelina Vega, and hopefully we can see more of this over on Monday Night Raw. But that does just about do it for me here on the SmackDown review. I definitely enjoyed getting a chance to hop on here and talk about it with you. It was a good episode of SmackDown. Not a whole lot that I had to complain about, but all in all, I'm looking forward to talking about it next week. I might join you guys with some fries, maybe a double cheeseburger, might have a Big Mac here, some chicken nuggets. We'll see what happens, but I'll definitely have some McDonald's for that supersized episode of SmackDown on Twitter. I've been watching Ashley Mann and DJ Kuzma go back and forth talking about McDonald's stuff, getting me hungry over here. So with all that being said, guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. I hope you'll go check out the Football Function as well. I definitely have a lot of stuff coming there if you're a football fan, so you'll enjoy that. But as far as this show goes, I really appreciate you listening. If you're a first-time listener, thank you for choosing it. If you're a regular listener, thank you for making it part of your weekly routine. I certainly appreciate it. Hope you also check out some of the other shows that we have here on the WWE Podcast, because we have a damn stacked team, and we just got fire content coming on a weekly basis, so always tune in and always contribute to that mailbag if you want to get your voice heard on the show. That's a damn good way to do it. But I am almost out of breath, and I am almost about to pass out here because I need to get something to eat. So thank you so much for listening to the show, guys. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.